This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents Legacy by Nora Roberts. Narrated for you by January Lavoie. For my children and their children, and all who come after. Part 1. Ambitions. Power to do good is the true and lawful end of aspiring. Sir Francis Bacon. Chapter 1. Georgetown. The first time Adrian Rizzo met her father, he tried to kill her. At 7, her world consisted primarily of movement. Most of the time she lived with her mother and Mimi, who looked after them both, in New York. But sometimes they stayed in L.A. for a few weeks, or in Chicago or Miami. In the summer, she got to visit with her grandparents in Maryland for at least 2 weeks. That, in her opinion, was the most fun because they had dogs and a big yard to play in, and a tire for a swing. When they lived in Manhattan, she went to school, and that was fine. She got to take dance lessons and do gymnastics, and that was way better than school. When they traveled for her mother's work, Mimi homeschooled her because she had to be educated. Mimi made learning about the place where they stayed part of being educated. Since they were in D.C. for a whole month, part of school meant visiting the monuments, taking a White House tour, and going to the Smithsonian. Sometimes she got to work with her mom, and she liked that a lot. Whenever she got to work in one of her mom's fitness videos, she had to learn a routine, like a cardio dance or yoga poses. She liked learning. She liked dancing. At 5, she did a whole video with her mom geared toward kids and families. A yoga one, because, after all, she was the baby in Yoga Baby, her mother's company. It made her proud and excited that her mother said they'd do another, maybe when she was 10, to target that age group. Her mom knew all about age groups and demographics and things like that. Adrian heard her talking about them with her manager and her producers. Her mom knew plenty about fitness, too, and the mind-body connection, and nutrition and meditation, and all sorts of things like that. She didn't know how to cook, not like Poppy and Nana, who owned a restaurant. She didn't like to play games, like Mimi, because she stayed really busy building her career. She had a lot of meetings and rehearsals and planning sessions and public appearances and interviews. Even at 7, Adrian understood Lena Rizzo didn't know a whole lot about being a mom. Still, she didn't mind if Adrian played with her makeup, as long as she put everything back where it belonged. And she never got mad if they worked on a routine and Adrian made mistakes. Best of all, on this trip, instead of flying back to New York when her mom finished this video and all the interviews and meetings, they got to drive to visit her grandparents for a long weekend. She had plans to try to negotiate that into a week, but for now, she sat on the floor in the doorway and watched her mother work out another routine. Lena had chosen this house for the month because it had a home gym with mirrored walls, something as essential to her as the number of bedrooms. She did squats and lunges, knee lifts, burpees. Adrian knew all the names. And Lena talked to the mirror, her viewers, giving instructions, encouragement. Now and then she said a bad word and started something over again. Adrian thought her beautiful, like a sweaty princess, even though she didn't have her makeup on because there weren't any people or cameras. She had green eyes like Nana and skin that looked like she bathed in the sun, even though she didn't. Her hair, pulled back in a scrunchie now, was like the chestnuts you could buy all warm and smelling good in a bag at Christmas time. She was tall, not as tall as Poppy, and Adrian hoped she would be too when she grew up. She wore tight, tiny shorts and a sports bra, but she wouldn't wear anything that showed so much for videos or appearances because Lena said it wasn't classy. Since she'd been raised to be mind-body health conscious, Adrian knew her mom was fit, firm, and fabulous. Muttering to herself, Lena walked over to make some notes on what Adrian knew was the outline for the video. This one would include three segments: cardio, strength training, and yoga, each 30 minutes, with a bonus 15-minute express section on total body. Lena grabbed a towel to mop off her face and spotted her daughter.
"Crap, Adrian! You gave me a jolt. I didn't know you were there. Where's Mimi?"
"She's in the kitchen. We're going to have chicken and rice and asparagus for dinner."
"Great. Why don't you go give her a hand with that? I need a shower."
"How come you're mad?"
"I'm not mad."
"You were mad when you were talking on the phone with Harry. You yelled how you didn't tell anybody, especially some bad word tabloid reporter."
Lena yanked the scrunchie out of her hair the way she did when she had a headache.
"You shouldn't listen to private conversations."
"I didn't listen. I heard. Are you mad at Harry?"
Adrian really liked her mother's publicist. He snuck her little bags of M&Ms or Skittles and told funny jokes.
"No, I'm not mad at Harry. Go help Mimi. Tell her I'll be down in about a half hour."
She was too mad, Adrian thought when her mother walked away. Maybe not at Harry, but at somebody, because she'd made a lot of mistakes when she'd practiced and said a lot of bad words. Her mother hardly ever made mistakes. Or maybe she just had a headache. Mimi said people sometimes got headaches if they worried too much. Adrian got up from the floor. But since helping with dinner was boring, she went into the fitness room. She stood in front of the mirrors, a girl tall for her age with her curly hair, black as her grandfather's had once been, escaping a green scrunchie. Her eyes had too much gold in them to rate a true green like her mother's, but she kept hoping they'd change. In her pink shorts and flowered t-shirt, she struck a pose, and turning on the music in her head, danced. She loved her dance classes and gymnastics when they were in New York, but now she imagined not taking a class, but leading one. She twirled, kicked, did a handspring, the splits, cross-step, salsa, leap, making it up as she went. She amused herself for 20 minutes, the last innocent 20 minutes of her life. Then someone pushed the buzzer on the front door and kept pushing it. It had an angry sound and one she'd never forget. She wasn't supposed to open the door herself, but that didn't mean she couldn't go see. So she wandered out to the living room, then the entranceway as Mimi marched in from the kitchen. Mimi dried her hands on a bright red dishcloth as she hustled through.
"For Pete's sake, where's the fire?"
She rolled her deep brown eyes at Adrian, tucked the cloth in the waistband of her jeans. A small woman with a powerful voice, she shouted,
"Hold your damn horses!"
She knew Mimi was the same age as her mother because they'd gone to college together.
"What's your problem?"
she snapped, then turned the lock and opened the door. From where she stood, Adrian saw Mimi's expression go from irritated, like it got when Adrian didn't pick up her room, to scared. And everything happened so fast. Mimi tried to close the door again, but the man pushed it open, pushed her back. He was big, so much bigger than Mimi. He had a little beard with some gray in it, and more in his hair, like silver wings on the gold. But his face was all red like he'd been running. Adrian's first shock at seeing the big man shove Mimi froze her in place.
"Where the fuck is she?"
"She's not here. You can't barge in here like this. Get out." "You get out now, John, or I'm calling the police."
"Lying bitch."
He grabbed Mimi's arm, shook her.
"Where is she? She thinks she can run her mouth, ruin my life.
Get your hands off me. You're drunk."
When she tried to pull away, He slapped her. The sound reverberated like a gunshot in Adrian's head, and she leapt forward.
Don't you hit her! You leave her alone!
Adrian, you go upstairs! Go upstairs right now! But temper up, Adrian balled her fists.
He has to go away!
For this?
The man snarled at Adrian.
For this? She ruins my goddamn life? Doesn't look a thing like me. She must have been whoring around and she's trying to pin the little bastard on me. Fuck that. Fuck her!
Adrian, upstairs! Mimi whirled toward her, and Adrian didn't see mad, like what she felt. She saw scared.
Now! The bitch is up there, isn't she? Liar! Here's what I'd do to liars.
He didn't slap this time, but used his fist once, twice, on Mimi's face. When she crumpled, that fear dove into Adrian. Help. She had to get help. But he caught her on the stairs, snapped her head back as he grabbed the tail of curly hair and yanked. She screamed for her mother.
Yeah, you call mommy.
He slapped her so the sting burned like fire in her face.
We want to talk to mommy.
As he dragged her up the stairs, Lena ran out of the bedroom in a robe, her hair still wet from the shower.
Adrian Rizzo, what the...
She stopped, stood very still as she locked eyes with the man.
Let her go, John. Let her go so you and I can talk.
You've done enough talking. You ruined my life, you stupid hick.
I didn't talk to that reporter or to anyone about you. That story didn't come from me.
Liar.
He yanked Adrian's hair again, so hard it felt like her head was on fire. Lena took two careful steps forward.
Let her go, and we'll work it out. I can fix this.
Too fucking late. The university suspended me this morning. My wife is mortified. My children. And I don't believe for one fucking minute this little bitch is mine. Are crying. You came back here, back to my city, to do this.
No, John. I came for work. I didn't talk to the reporter. It's been over 7 years, John. Why would I do this now? At all? You're hurting my daughter. Stop hurting my daughter.
He hit Mimi.
Adrian could smell her mother's shower and shampoo, the subtle sweetness of orange blossoms, and the stink from the man she didn't know was sweat and bourbon.
He hit her in the face, and she fell down.
What if you...
Lena took her eyes off him to look over the railing that ran across the second floor. She saw Mimi, face bloody, crawling behind a sofa. She tracked her gaze back to John.
You have to stop this, John, before someone gets hurt. Let me...
I'm hurt, you fucking whore.
His voice sounded hot and red like his face, like the fire burning in Adrian's scalp.
I'm sorry this happened, but...
My family's hurt. Want to see some hurt? Let's start with your bastard.
He threw her. Adrian had the sensation of flying, brief and terrifying, before she hit the edge of the top step. The fire that had been in her head now burst in her wrist, her hand flared up her arm. Then her head banged against the wood, and all she could see was her mother as the man lurched toward her. He hit her. He hit her, but her mother hit back and kicked. And there were terrible sounds, so terrible she wanted to cover her ears, but she couldn't move, could only sprawl on the steps and shake. Even when her mother shouted at her to run, she couldn't. He had his hands around her mother's throat, shaking her, and her mom hit him in the face like he had Mimi. There was blood on her mom, on the man. They were holding each other, almost like a hug, but hard and mean. Then her mother stomped down on his foot, jerked her knee up, and when the man stumbled back, she shoved. He hit the railing. Then he was flying. Adrian saw him fall, arms waving. She saw him crash into the table where her mother put flowers and candles. She heard those terrible sounds.
She saw the blood run out from his head, his ears, his nose. She saw... Then her mother lifted her, turned her, pressed her face to her breast. Don't look, Adrian. It's all right now.
It hurts.
I know. Lena cradled Adrian's wrist. I'm going to fix it. Mimi. Oh, Mimi. The police are coming.
Her eyes swollen, half closed, already blackening, Mimi wobbled up the steps, then sat and put her arms around both of them.
Help's coming.
Over Adrian's head, Mimi mouthed two words. He's dead. Adrian would always remember the pain and the quiet blue eyes of the paramedic who stabilized the green stick fracture in her wrist. He had a quiet voice, too, when he shined a little light in her eyes, when he asked her how many fingers he held up. She'd remember the policemen, the first ones who came after the sirens stopped screaming, the ones in the dark blue uniforms. But most of it, even as it happened, seemed blurry and distant. They huddled in the second floor sitting room with its view of the back courtyard and its little koi pond. Mostly the police in the uniforms talked to her mother because they took Mimi to the hospital. Her mother told them the man's name, Jonathan Bennett, and how he taught English literature at Georgetown University, or did, when she knew him. Her mother said what happened, or started to. Then a man and a woman came in. The man was really tall and wore a brown tie. His skin was a darker brown and his teeth really white. The woman had red hair cut short and freckles all over her face. They had badges, like on TV shows. Ms. Rizzo, I'm Detective Riley, and this is my partner, Detective Cannon. The woman hooked her badge back on her belt. We know this is difficult, but we need to ask you and your daughter some questions. Then she smiled at Adrian. It's Adrian, right? When Adrian nodded, Riley looked back at Lena. Is it all right if Adrian shows me her room? If she and I talk there while you talk to Detective Cannon?
Will it be quicker that way? They took my friend, my daughter's nanny, to the hospital. Broken nose, concussion. And Adrian has what the paramedic thinks is a green stick fracture on her left wrist, and she hit her head.
You look a little rough yourself,
Cannon commented, and Lena shrugged, then winced at the movement.
Bruised ribs will heal, so will my face. He really focused on my face.
We can have you taken to the hospital now and talk there once you've seen a doctor.
I'd rather go when you're finished downstairs.
Understood.
Riley looked back at Adrian.
Is it okay if we talk in your room, Adrian?
I guess so.
She got up, holding her arm in its sling close to her chest.
I won't let you take my mom to jail.
Don't be silly, Adrian.
Ignoring her mother, Adrian stared into Riley's eyes. They were green, but lighter than her mother's.
I won't let you.
Got it. We're just going to talk, okay? Is your room up here?
Two doors down on the right,
Lena said.
Go on, Adrian. Go with Detective Riley. Then we'll go check on Mimi. Everything's going to be fine.
Adrian led the way, and Riley put her smile back on as they walked into a room done in soft pinks and spring greens. A big stuffed dog lay on the bed.
This is a pretty great room, and really tidy.
I had to clean it up this morning, or no going to see the cherry blossoms and get ice cream sundaes.
She winced, much like Lena had.
Don't tell about the sundaes. We were supposed to get frozen yogurt.
Our secret. Is your mom really strict about what you eat?
Sometimes. Mostly.
Tears sparkled into her eyes.
Is Mimi going to die like the man did?
She got hurt, but not real bad. And I know they're taking good care of her. How about we sit here with this guy?
Riley sat on the side of the bed, gave the big dog a pat.
What's his name?
He's Barkley. Harry gave him to me for Christmas. We can't have a real dog now because we live in New York and travel too much.
He looks like a great dog. Can you tell me and Barkley what happened?
It poured out, a flood through a break in a dam.
The man came to the door. He kept buzzing and buzzing, so I went out to see. I'm not supposed to open the door myself, so I waited for Mimi. She came out from the kitchen and opened the door. Then she tried to shut it again really fast, but he pushed it open and he pushed her. He almost knocked her down.
Did you know him?
Nuh-uh, but Mimi did, because she called him John and told him to go away. He was mad and yelling and saying bad words. I'm not supposed to say them.
That's okay. Riley kept petting Barkley like he was a real dog.
I get the gist.
He wanted to see my mom, but Mimi said she wasn't here, even though she was. She was upstairs taking a shower. And he kept yelling, and he slapped her face. He hit her. You're not supposed to hit. Hitting somebody is wrong.
It was wrong.
I yelled at him to leave her alone because he had her arms and he was hurting her. And he looked at me. He didn't see me before, but he looked at me, and it made me scared how he looked at me. But he was hurting Mimi, and I got mad. Mimi said to go upstairs. To me, I mean, but he was hurting her. Then he hit her with his fist.
Adrian made one with her good hand while tears began to slide down her cheeks.
And there was blood, and she fell, and I ran. I ran to try to get to Mom, but he caught me. He pulled my hair. He pulled it so hard, and he pulled me up the stairs like that, and I was yelling for Mom.
You want to stop, honey? We can wait for you to tell me the rest.
No, no. Mom ran out and saw him, and she kept saying for him to let me go, but he wouldn't. He kept saying she'd ruined his life with a lot of bad words, the really bad ones. And she kept saying she hadn't told and she'd fix it, but to let me go. He was hurting me, and he called me bad names, and he threw me.
He threw you?
At the stairs. He threw me at the stairs, and I hit, and my wrist, it went on fire, and I hit my head. But I didn't fall down the stairs very far, just like a couple, I guess. And my mom screamed at him, and she ran at him, and she fought with him. He hit her face, and he had his hands on her like...
She mimed choking.
I couldn't move, and he hit her face, but she hit back. She hit back hard, and she kicked him, and they kept fighting, and then he went over the railing. She pushed him to get away, to get to me. Her face had blood, and she pushed him, and he went over the railing. It was his fault.
Okay.
Mimi crawled up the steps while Mom got me and held me, and she said help was coming. And everybody had blood on them. Nobody ever hit me before he did. I hate he was my father.
How do you know he was?
Because of what he was yelling. What he called me. I'm not stupid. And he teaches at the college where my mom went to college, and she told me she met my father in college, so...
Adrian lifted her shoulders.
That's it. He hit everybody, and he smelled bad, and he tried to throw me down the stairs. He fell because he was mean.
Riley put an arm around Adrian's shoulders and thought, that sounds about right. They kept Mimi in the hospital overnight. Lena bought hospital gift shop flowers, the best she could do, to take to her room. Adrian had the first X-ray of her life and would earn the first cast of her life once the swelling went down. Rather than try to complete Mimi's dinner plans, Lena ordered pizza. God knew the kid deserved it, just like she herself deserved a really, really big glass of wine. She poured one, and while Adrian ate, broke her long-standing rule and poured a second. She had a million calls to make, but they'd wait. Every goddamn thing would wait until she felt steadier. They ate in the back courtyard with its shady trees and privacy fence. Or Adrian ate while Lena nibbled on a single slice between sips of wine. Maybe it was a bit cool for outdoor dining and more than a little late to have Adrian fill up on pizza, but A vicious day was a vicious day. She hoped her daughter would sleep, but had to admit she was a little vague on the nighttime ritual. Mimi handled that. Maybe a bubble bath, as long as she kept the temporary cast dry. The thought of the cast, and how much worse it could have been, had her longing to top off her wine glass again. But she resisted. Lena had a good handle on self-discipline.
How come he was my father?
Lena looked over, saw those gold-green eyes watching her. Because I was once young and stupid. I'm sorry. I'd say I wish I hadn't been, but then you wouldn't be here, would you? Can't fix what used to be. Only what's now and coming up.
Was he nicer when you were young and stupid?
Lena let out a laugh, and her ribs whined pitifully. How much, she wondered, did you tell a 7-year-old? I thought he was.
Did he hit you before?
Once. Only once, and after that I never ever saw him again. If a man hits you once, he's probably going to hit you again and again.
You said before that you loved my dad, but things didn't work out and he didn't want us, so he didn't matter anymore.
I thought I loved him. I should have said that. I was only 20, Adrian. He was older and handsome and charming and smart. A young professor. I fell in love with who I thought he was. And he didn't matter between then and now.
Why was he so mad today?
Because someone, a reporter, found out and wrote a story. I don't know how. I don't know who told him. I didn't.
You didn't because he didn't matter.
That's exactly right. How much did you tell? Lena thought again. Under the circumstances, maybe all of it. He was married, Adrian. He had a wife and 2 children. I didn't know. That is, he lied to me and told me he was in the middle of a divorce. I believed him. Had she? Lena wondered. So hard to remember now. Maybe I just wanted to, but I believed him. He had his own little apartment near the college, so I believed he was essentially single. Later, I found out I wasn't the only one he lied to. When I found out the truth, I broke things off. He didn't really care. Not fully true, she thought. Screamed, threatened, shoved. Then I realized I was pregnant. Later, much later than I should have realized, I felt like I had to tell him. That's when he hit me. He wasn't drunk, like today. He'd been drinking, she thought, but not drunk. Not like today. I told him I didn't want or need anything from him, that I wouldn't humiliate myself by telling anyone he was the biological father. And I left. Lena edited out the threats, the demands she get rid of it, and all the other ugliness. No point in it. I finished out the term, graduated, then I went home. Poppy and Nana helped me. You know the rest, how I started doing classes and videos when I was pregnant with you, for pregnant women, then after for moms and babies.
Yoga baby.
Right.
But he was always mean. Does that mean I will be too?
God, she sucked at this mother thing. She did her best to think what her own mother would say. Do you feel mean?
Sometimes I get mad.
Tell me about it. But Lena smiled. Mean's a choice, I think, and you don't choose to be mean. He was right, too, that you don't look like him. Too much Rizzo in you. Lena reached across the table, took Adrian's good hand. Maybe it felt too much like speaking adult to adult, but it was the best she could do. He doesn't matter, Adrian, unless we let him matter. So we won't let him matter.
Are you going to have to go to jail?
Lena toasted with her wine glass. You're not going to let them, remember? Then she saw the quick fear and squeezed Adrian's hand. I'm joking. Just joking. No, Adrian, the police could see what happened. You told the detective the truth, right?
I did, I promise.
So did I. So did Mimi. You put that out of your mind. What is going to happen is because there was this story and then this happened, there will be more stories. I'm going to talk to Harry soon and he'll help me deal with that.
Can we still go to Poppy and Nana's?
Yes. As soon as Mimi's better, after you get your cast, after I deal with some things, we're going there.
Can we go soon? Really soon?
As soon as we can. Just a few days, maybe.
That's soon. Everything will be better there.
A long time, Lena thought, before things would be better. But she polished off her wine. Absolutely. Chapter 2. Lena's career had its roots in her unplanned pregnancy. In a matter of months, she went from college student and part-time personal trainer slash group fitness instructor to the world of exercise videos. The green shoots took a while to break through the ground, but determination, persistence, and a canny head for business pushed them toward bloom. In the months before John Bennett had shoved through the door in Georgetown, her career blossomed, with Yoga Baby's sales, videos, DVDs, personal appearances, a book with another planned, generating over $2 million in profit. An attractive, quick-witted woman, she made the most of segments on morning shows, then late-night appearances. She wrote articles for fitness magazines and boosted those with photo shoots. She was a young, attractive woman with a long, buff body and knew how to use both to her advantage. She even snagged a couple of cameos on network series. She liked the limelight and wasn't ashamed of it or her ambitions. She believed absolutely in her product, health, fitness, and balance, and believed absolutely she was the best person to promote that product. Working hard posed no issues for Lena. She thrived on it, on the travel, the packed schedules, and the planning for more. She had a line of fitness gear in the works, and in consult with a nutritionist and MD, had begun plans for supplements. Then she'd shoved the man who'd inadvertently changed the direction of her life to his death. Self-defense. It didn't take long for the police to conclude she'd acted in defense of herself, her daughter, and her friend. And in a horrible way, the publicity boosted her sales, her name recognition, and the offers. It didn't take her long to decide to ride that wave. A week after the worst happened, she made the drive from Georgetown to rural Maryland with plans to make the best out of it. She wore enormous sunglasses, as even her skill with makeup couldn't hide the bruises. Her ribs still ached, but she'd started a modified workout routine and added extra meditation. Mimi still got the occasional headache, but her broken nose was healing, her blackened eye fading to sick yellow. Adrian found her cast annoying, but liked getting it signed. In 2 weeks, according to the doctor, she'd need another X-ray. It could have been worse. Lena reminded herself constantly, it could have been worse. Since Harry bought Adrian a new Game Boy, she entertained herself in the back seat during the drive. Lena saw the shadows of the Maryland mountains, the pale lavender against a bold blue sky. She'd wanted so desperately to escape from them, from the quiet, the creepingly slow pace, and into movement, crowds, people, everything out there. And she still did. She wasn't made for small towns and country living. God knew she'd never wanted to make meatballs or pizza sauce or run a restaurant, family legacy or not. She'd craved the crowds, the city, and yes, the limelight. She considered New York home base, if not fully home. Home was, and always would be, she thought, where the work and the action lived. When she finally turned off I-70, the traffic vanished, and the road began to wind through rolling hills, green fields, and the scatter of homes and farms that spread over them. Well, she thought, you could go home again, but you just couldn't stay there. At least not Lena Teresa Rizzo.
We're almost there.
Adrian's voice came like a cheer from the back seat.
Look, cows, horses. I wish Poppy and Nana had horses. Or chickens. Chickens would be fun.
Adrian opened her window, stuck her face in the opening like a happy puppy. Her black curls danced and blew. And would, Helena knew, end up in a rat's nest of knots and tangles. Then the questions poured out.
How much longer? Can I swing on the tire? Will Nana have lemonade? Can I play with the dogs? Can I? Will they? How come?
Lena let Mimi field the questions. She'd have others to answer before much longer. She turned at the red barn where she'd lost her virginity at not quite 17 in the hayloft. Son of a dairy farmer, she recalled. Football quarterback. Matt Weaver, she thought. Handsome, built, sweet-natured, but no pushover. They'd sort of loved each other, the way you do at not quite 17. He'd wanted to marry her one day, but she'd had other plans. She'd heard he'd married someone else, had a kid or two, and still worked the farm with his father. Good for him, she mused, and meant it. But not and never for her. She turned again, away from the little town of Traveler's Creek, where Rizzo's Italian restaurant had stood on the pokey town square like an institution for two generations. Her own grandparents who'd built it had finally accepted they needed a warmer climate. But hadn't they started another Rizzo's on the Outer Banks? In the blood, they said, but somehow, thankfully, that gene had skipped hers. She followed the creek, drove toward one of the three covered bridges that brought photographers, tourists, and weddings to the area. Charming, Lena supposed, standing as it did on the little rise at the curve of the creek. And as always, Mimi and Adrian let out twin woos as she drove between those barn red walls under that peaked blue roof. She turned again, ignoring the way Adrian bounced like a rubber ball on the back seat, and at last onto the winding lane, across the second bridge over the creek that gave the town its name, to the big house on the hill. The dogs came running, the big yellow mutt and the little long-eared hound.
There's Tom and Jerry! Woo! Hi, guys! Hi!
Keep your seatbelt on until I stop, Adrian.
Mom!
But she did as she was told, just kept bouncing.
It's Nana and Poppy.
They came out onto the big wraparound porch, Dom and Sophia, hands linked. Sophia, chestnut curls framing her face, hit 5'10 in her pink sneakers, and still her husband towered over her at 6'5. Fit and strong, both looked a decade younger than their ages as they stood in the shade of the second-story porch. How old were they now? Her mother around 67 or 68. Her father 4 years older or so, Lena thought. The high school sweethearts with nearly 50 years of marriage under their belts. They'd weathered the loss of a son who'd lived less than 48 hours, 3 miscarriages, and the heartbreak of a medical opinion that there would be no baby for them. Until, surprise, with both of them in their 40s, Lena Teresa came along. Lena parked under a wide carport beside a shiny red pickup and a burly black SUV. She knew her mother's baby, the sleek turquoise convertible, had its place of honor in the detached garage. She'd barely set the brake when Adrian jumped out.
Nana! Poppy! Hi, guys! Hi!
She hugged the dogs as Tom leaned against her and Jerry wagged and licked, then ran full out into her grandfather's open arms. I know you think I'm making a mistake, Lena began. But look at her, Mimi. This is best for her right now. A girl needs her mother. So saying, Mimi pushed out, put on a smile, and walked to the porch. Jesus, I'm not sticking her in a basket and leaving her in the reeds. It's one damn summer. Her mother walked down to the porch steps, met Lena halfway. Sophia cupped her daughter's bruised face in one hand, then saying nothing, just enfolded her. Nothing else in the past horrible week had come so close to breaking her. I can't do this, Mom. I don't want Adrian to see me cry. Honest tears aren't shameful. We've all had enough of them for a while. Deliberately, she drew back. You look good. I can't say the same. Lena worked up a smile. You should see the other guy. Sophia let out a quick bark of laughter. That's my Lena. Come, we'll sit on the porch since it's so nice. You'll be hungry. We have food. Maybe it was the Italian, or maybe it was the restaurant genes. Either way, Lena's parents assumed anyone who came to their home had to be hungry. The adults sat at the round table on the porch while Adrian played in the front yard with the dogs. They had bread and cheese, antipasto, olives. The lemonade Adrian hoped for filled a glass pitcher. Though it had barely struck noon, there was wine. The half glass Lena allowed herself helped ease the tensions of the drive. They didn't speak of what had happened, not as Adrian ran back to sit, briefly, on Dom's lap and show off her new Game Boy, or drank lemonade and chattered about the dogs. Patient, Lena thought. Her father. Always so patient with children, so good with them. And so handsome with his snowdrift of hair, the laugh lines crinkling around his golden brown eyes. She'd thought all her life how he and Sophia made the perfect couple, tall and fit, handsome, and so completely in tune with each other, while she'd always felt just a beat out of step. Well, she had been, hadn't she? Just a beat off with them, with this place, with the town that locals called the Creek. So she'd found her rhythm elsewhere. Adrian giggled when, after her grandparents dutifully signed her cast, her grandmother sketched the dogs and added their names. Your rooms are ready, Sophia said. We'll get your bags upstairs so you can unpack. Take a rest if you want.
I have to go into the shop, Dom added, but I'll be home for dinner.
Actually, Adrian's been talking about the tire swing for days. Mimi, maybe you could walk around back with her, let her play for a bit.
All right.
Mimi rose, and though her single glance toward Lena signaled disapproval, she called cheerfully to Adrian, Let's go swing!
Yes! Come on, boys!
Dom waited until Adrian ran around to the side of the house with Mimi following.
And what's this?
Mimi and I aren't staying. I have to get back to New York. Finish the project I started in D.C. It's just not possible to finish it there now, so I'm hoping you'll be willing to keep Adrian.
Lena.
Sophia reached over to take her daughter's hand.
You need a few days at least to rest, to recover, to help Adrian feel safe again.
I don't have time to rest and recover. And where would Adrian feel safer than here?
Without her mother?
She shifted to her father.
She'll have both of you. I have to get ahead of this story. I can't let it derail my career, my business, so I get ahead of it and I take the lead.
The man might have killed you. You, Adrian, and Mimi.
I know, Dad. Believe me, I was there. She'll be happy here. She loves it here. It's all she's talked about for days.
I have the medical records, so she can see a doctor here for the next X-ray. The doctor in D.C. thinks she'll be able to have a removable splint in a week or two. It's a common injury and minor, so...
Minor!
When her father exploded, Lena held up both hands.
He tried to throw her down the stairs. I couldn't get to her in time. I couldn't stop him. If he hadn't been so stupid, stinking drunk, he'd have pulled that off, and she could have broken her neck instead of her wrist. Believe me, I'm never going to forget that.
Dom, Sophia murmured it, patted her husband's hand.
How long do you want her to stay with us?
For the summer. Look, I know it's a long time, and I know it's a lot to ask.
We'd love to have her,
Sophia said simply.
You're wrong to do this. You're wrong, Lena, to leave her now. But we'll keep her safe and happy.
I appreciate it.
She's basically finished the school year, but Mimi has a few more assignments for her and instructions for you. When the school year starts up again, this will be behind her. And me. Us. Her parents said nothing for a moment, only stared at her. Her father's golden brown eyes, her mother's green, made her think of how her daughter was so much a blend of these two people.
"Does she know you're leaving her here?" Dom demanded. "Going back to New York without her?"
"I didn't say anything because I needed to ask you first." Lena rose. "I'll go talk to her now. Mimi and I should get on the road soon." Lena paused. "I know I've disappointed you. Again. But I think this is the best thing for everybody. I need time to focus, and I wouldn't be able to give her the attention she might need right now. Plus, there's no chance of some reporter getting pictures and slapping her face on a supermarket tabloid if she's here with you."
"But you'll go after publicity,"
Dom reminded her. "The sort I can control and guide. Yeah. You know, Dad, a lot of men aren't like you. They aren't kind and loving, and a lot of women end up with bruises on their faces." She tapped a finger under her eye. "A lot of kids end up with an arm in a cast. You can be damn sure I'll speak about that issue when I get the chance." She stalked away, furious because she believed she was right, and frustrated because she suspected she was wrong. An hour later, Adrian stood on the porch watching her mother and Mimi drive away.
"He hurt everybody because of me, so she doesn't want me around."
Dom folded himself down from his considerable height, laid his hands gently on her shoulders until she met his eyes.
"That's not true. None of this is your fault, and your mom's letting you stay with us because she's going to be so busy."
"She's always busy. Mimi watches me anyway."
"We all thought you'd like to spend the summer with us." Sophia ran a hand down Adrian's hair. "If you're not happy, let's say in 1 week, Poppy and I will drive you up to New York ourselves."
"You would?"
"That's right. But for a week, we get to have our favorite granddaughter with us. We'll have our Joya. Our joy." Adrian smiled a little.
"I'm your only granddaughter."
"Still the favorite. And if you stay happy, your Poppy can teach you how to make ravioli, and I can teach you how to make tiramisu."
"But you'll have chores."
Dom tapped a finger on her nose.
"Feeding the dogs, helping in the garden."
"You know I like to do that when I come for visits. They're not like chores."
"Happy work is still work."
"Can I go to the shop and watch you toss pizza dough?"
"This visit, I'll teach you how to toss the dough. And we can start when your cast comes off. I have to go to the shop now. So you go wash your hands, and you can come with me."
"Okay."
When she raced inside, Dom straightened, sighed.
"Children are resilient. She'll be fine."
"Yes, she will. But Lena will never get this time back."
"Well."
Sophia patted Dom's cheek. "Don't buy her too much candy."
"I'll buy her just enough."
Raylan Wells sat at a two-top at Rizzo's doing his stupid homework. The way he looked at it, he already had homework because he had chores at home. So why couldn't schoolwork stay in stupid school? At 10, Raylan often felt beleaguered and bewildered by the adult world and the rules laid down for kids. He'd finished his math, which he found easy because math made sense. Lots of other shit just didn't. Like answering a bunch of questions about the Civil War. Sure, they lived sort of near Antietam and all that, and the battlefield was cool, but all that was, like, over. The Union won, the Confederacy lost. Like Stan Lee said, and Stan Lee was a genius. Enough said. So Raylan answered a question, then doodled, answered another question, and daydreamed an epic battle between Spider-Man and Doc Ock. Since they'd hit what his mom called the lag time,
after lunch, before dinner. Most of the customers were high school kids coming in to play video games in the back, maybe grab a slice or a Coke. He couldn't plug in any quarters himself until he finished his stupid homework. Mom's rule. He glanced across the mostly empty dining room, past the counter, and to the big open kitchen where she worked. 6 months earlier, she'd done all her cooking at home, in their kitchen. But that was before his father took off. Now his mom cooked here because they needed to pay bills and stuff. She wore the big red apron with Rizzos across the front and had her hair up under the goofy white hat all the cooks and kitchen prep people wore. She said she liked working here, and he thought she told the truth about that because she looked happy when she worked at that gigantic stove. And mostly, he could recognize when she didn't tell the truth. Like when she told him and his sister everything was fine, but her eyes didn't say they were. He'd been scared at first, but he'd said everything was okay. Maya had cried at first, but she'd only been 7, and a girl. But she got over it. Mostly. He figured he was the man of the house now, but he'd learned really fast that didn't mean he could skip his homework or stay up later on school nights. So he answered another dumb Civil War question. Maya had permission to go to her friend Cassie's house to do homework together. Not that she ever got very much. For him, permission denied. Maybe because he and his best friend and his other two best friends had shot hoops and hung out instead of doing their homework the day before. And the day before that. Doc Ock had nothing on mom wrath. So now he had to report to Rizzo's after school instead of hanging out at Mick's. Or at Nate's, or Spencer's. It wouldn't be so bad if Mick or Nate or Spence could hang out with him at Rizzo's, but their moms also had the wrath. When he saw Mr. Rizzo come in, Raylan perked up a little. When Mr. Rizzo went into the kitchen, he'd toss dough. Raylan's mom and some of the other cooks could toss it too, but Mr. Rizzo could do tricks like toss it up, spin around, catch it again behind his back. And if they weren't too busy, he let Raylan try it. Let him make his own personal pizza with any toppings he wanted, for free. He didn't pay much attention to the kid who came in with Mr. Rizzo, because girl. But she had a cast on her arm, which made her marginally more interesting. He made up reasons for the cast while he finished the last stupid questions on his assignment. She'd fallen down a well, out of a tree, out of a window during a house fire. With the questions answered, finally, he started the last assignment. He'd done the math first, because easy, the history junk next, because boring, and saved the assignment of using this week's spelling words in a sentence for last, because fun. He liked words even more than math, and almost as much as drawing stuff. 1. Pedestrian. The getaway car from the bank robbery ran over the pedestrian as it raced away. 2. Neighborhood. When aliens from the planet Zork invaded, the world counted on the one and only friendly neighborhood Spider-Man to protect them. 3. Harvesting. The evil scientist kidnapped bunches of people and started harvesting their organs for his crazy experiments. He finished up the last of the 10 words as his mother sat down at the two-top.
I did all the dumb homework.
Because her shift had ended, Jan had taken off her apron and cap. She'd cut her hair short after her husband left and felt the pixie suited her. Plus, it required almost no time to fiddle with. She thought Raylan could use a haircut himself. His once sunflower blonde hair had begun to turn toward her own dark honey tone. He was growing up, she thought, as she gestured to Raylan to show her the work. He rolled those wonderful bottle green eyes at her dad's eyes, and pushed his binder across the table. Growing up, she mused, his hair no longer baby fine and spun sugar blonde, but thick, a little wavy. He'd lost the baby roundness in his face. Where did the time go?
and had the fined down, sharp edges he'd carry into adulthood. He'd gone from cute to handsome right in front of her eyes. She checked his work because, though she might be able to see the man he'd become one day in the boy liked to goof off. She read the spelling sentences, sighed. Plight. The Dark Knight's plight was to fight for right with might. He just grinned.
It works.
How come somebody so damn smart spends so much time and effort avoiding homework he can get done in under an hour?
Because homework stinks.
It does, she agreed, but it's your job. You did good today.
So can I go hang out at Mix?
For somebody so good at math, you're having a hard time counting the days left in the school week. No hanging out until Saturday, and if you screw off on your assignments again...
No hanging out for 2 weeks,
he finished, in a tone more sorrowful than aggrieved.
But what am I going to do now? For hours?
Don't you worry, sweetie. She pushed the binder back to him. I've got plenty of things for you to do.
Chores.
Now the aggrieved.
But I did all my homework.
Aw. Do you want a prize for doing what you're supposed to do? I've got it. With a huge smile, with dancing eyes, she clapped her hands together. How about I kiss your whole face? She leaned toward him. Just kiss your whole face right here in front of everybody. Yum, yum, kiss, kiss. He cringed, but couldn't stop the grin.
Cut it out.
Big, noisy face kisses wouldn't embarrass you, would they, my precious baby boy?
You're weird, Mom.
I get it from you. Now let's go get your sister and go home. He shoved his binder back into his loaded backpack. People were starting to come for a beer or a glass of wine, or to meet friends for an early dinner. Mr. Rizzo had put on the cap and apron now, and was doing his toss-the-dough tricks. The girl kid sat at the service bar on a stool and applauded.
Bye, Mr. Rizzo.
Mr. Rizzo caught the dough, twirled it, winked.
Ciao, Raylan. Take care of your mama.
Yes, sir.
They went outside onto the covered front porch, where some people already sat at tables drinking and eating. Pots of flowers sent out fragrances that mixed with the scent of fried calamari, of spicy sauce, and toasted bread. The town had big concrete tubs of flowers spaced along the square, and some of the businesses had more pots or hanging baskets. As they waited for the walk light at the crosswalk, Jan had to stop herself from taking her son's hand. 10 years old, she reminded herself. He didn't want to hold his mother's hand to cross the street.
Who was the kid with Mr. Rizzo?
Hmm? Oh, that's his granddaughter, Adrian. She's going to stay with them for the summer.
How come she's got that cast on?
She hurt her wrist.
How?
He asked as they crossed the street.
She fell.
Because she felt Raylan's eyes on her as they walked down the next block, she glanced over. What?
You get that look.
What look?
You get that look when you don't want to tell me something bad.
She supposed she did get a look. And she supposed, in a town the size of Traveler's Creek, with the Rizzos so much a part of its fabric, Raylan, with his bat ears, would hear anyway.
Her father hurt her.
Seriously?
His father had said and done a lot of mean things, but he'd never smashed up his wrist or Maya's.
I expect you to respect Mr. and Mrs. Rizzo's privacy, Raylan. And since I'm going to take Maya over there, she and Adrian are the same age, to see if they'll make friends, I don't want you to say anything to your sister. If Adrian wants to tell her or anyone, that's her business.
Okay, but geez, her dad broke her arm.
Wrist, but it's just as bad.
Is he in jail?
No. He died.
Holy crap!
Stunned and a little excited, he bounced on his toes.
Did she, like, kill him or something to defend herself?
No, don't be silly. She's just a little girl who's been through an ugly ordeal. I don't want you peppering her with questions.
They reached Cassie's house, right across the street from theirs. They got to keep their house because the Rizzos gave his mother a job,
after his father walked out on them and took most of the money out of the bank. That was one of the really mean things he'd done. Raylan had heard his mom crying when she thought he was sleeping after that, and before she got the job. He'd never do anything, say anything to hurt Mr. or Mrs. Rizzo. But the girl kid seemed a lot more interesting now. Chapter 3. Everything about the summer changed when Adrian met Maya. Her world opened up with sleepovers and playdates and secrets shared. For the first time in her life, she had a real best friend. She taught Maya yoga and dance steps and almost a handspring, and Maya taught her how to twirl a baton and how to play Yahtzee. Maya had a dog named Jimbo who could walk on his back legs and a cat named Miss Pris who liked to cuddle. She had a brother named Raylan, but all he wanted to do was play video games or read comic books or run around with his friends, so she didn't see that much of him. But he had green eyes, greener and darker than her mother's and her grandmother's, like they got a supercharge of green. Maya said he was mostly a duty head, but Adrian didn't see any real evidence of it since he steered clear of them. And she really liked his eyes. Still, it made her wonder what it would have been like to have a brother or a sister. A sister would be better, obviously, but having somebody close to the same age in the house seemed like fun. Maya's mom was really nice. Nonna said she was a jewel, and Poppy said she was a fine cook and a hard worker. Sometimes when Mrs. Wells had her shift, Maya came over and stayed all day, and if they asked in time, some of the other girls could come too. After the cast came off, she had to wear a removable splint for 3 more weeks. But she could take it off if she wanted a bubble bath, or if she got invited to swim in Maya's friend Cassie's backyard pool. One day deep in June, she went upstairs with Maya to get everything they needed for the tea party they planned to hold outside, under the big shade tree. She stopped by Raylan's open bedroom door. Always before, he'd kept it closed with a big "Keep Out" sign on it.
"We're not supposed to go in without permission," Maya told her.
She had her sunny blonde hair in French braids today because it was her mom's day off and she'd had time. Maya put a hand on her hip the way she did and rolled her eyes.
"As if I'd want to. It's messy and it's smelly."
Adrian didn't smell anything from the doorway, but messy hit the mark. He hadn't made the bed even a little. Clothes and shoes spread all over the floor along with action figures. But the walls gripped her attention. He'd covered them with drawings. Superheroes, battles with monsters or supervillains, spaceships, strange buildings, scary-looking forests.
"Did he draw all these?" "Yeah, he draws all the time. He draws good, but it's always stupid stuff. He never draws anything pretty, except he did once for Mom for Mother's Day. He drew a bouquet of flowers and colored them and everything. She cried, but because she liked it."
Adrian didn't think the drawings were stupid. Some were kind of scary, but not stupid. Still, she didn't say so since Maya was her best friend. As she poked her head in just a little farther, Raylan ran up the stairs. He froze in place a moment, eyes narrowed. Then he bounded over and into the doorway to block it.
"You're not allowed in my room."
"We didn't go in, poop brain. Nobody wants to go in your stinky room."
Maya gave an exaggerated sniff, slapped a hand on her hip.
"The door was open,"
Adrian said before Raylan could retaliate against his sister.
"I didn't go in, honest. I was just looking at the drawings. They're really..."